I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 4th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take the attendance by roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, present.
Hanson, present. Wasliwick, Amy.
Wasliwick, present.
Wasliwick, present. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, present.
Heintzman, present. Acomb, Patty.
Acomb, present.
Acomb, present. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, present.
Acklin, present. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, present.
Backer, present. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Present.
Becker, present. Eklund, Rob.
Present.
Eklund, present. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, present.
Fisher, present. Green, Steve.
Green, present.
Green, present. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, present.
Igo, present. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, present.
Jordan, present. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Lee, Fu.
Lee, present.
Lee, present. Lippert, Tom.
Lippert, present.
Lippert, present. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, present.
Lewick, present. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, present.
Morrison, present. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Tice, Tama.
Tice, present.
Tice is present.
A quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is the minutes for Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. Representative Jordan, have you looked over the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes from February 2nd, 2021.
Representative Jordan moves the minutes for February 2nd, Groundhog Day, 2021. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same nay. Ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Members, we have a couple bills today by Representative Wozlawick, House File 78 and House File 79. Representative Wozlawick, would you move that House File 78 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move that House File 78 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
And Representative Wozlawick also has an author's amendment. Would you like to move the H0078 A3 amendment and explain your amendment briefly?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move that amendment. What this amendment does is it changes a little language tweak to change perfluorochemicals to perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances, and then requires the MPCA to adopt water quality standards for PFAS by July 1st of 2024. It provides $492,000 in fiscal year 22 from the Environmental Fund for that purpose.
Any questions to the amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like? Representative Wozlawick moves H0078A3 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. Hearing no discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wozlawick, Amy.
Wozlawick, aye.
Wozlawick, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Acomb, Patty.
Acomb, aye.
Acomb, aye. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, aye.
Acklin, aye. Backer, Jeff. Backer, Jeff. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Aye.
Green, aye. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Backer, Jeff. Backer, Jeff. That is 18 ayes, 0 noes, and 1 abstention.
The H0078A3 amendment is adopted. Representative Oslawick, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, House File 78 would designate perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances, also known as PFAS, as a hazardous substance under the Minnesota Environmental Response and Liability Act, also known as MRLA. PFAS are found in a wide range of products, including carpet, cookware, food packaging, et cetera, which means that most people have been exposed to PFAS at some point in their life. The problem with these chemicals is that they are persistent in the environment and in the human body, meaning they don't break down and they can accumulate over time and cause adverse health effects in humans, such as low infant birth weights, cancer, and thyroid hormone disruptions. Clearly stating in law that PFAS is a hazardous substance would help improve the efficiency of how we do our investigative and cleanup process of these toxic chemicals. And as mentioned earlier, because of the adverse health effects, getting them out of the environment and out of potential exposure to people is a good thing to be doing. There's broad agreement that we should do something about these toxic chemicals. And this is one way to help get them cleaned up and reduce the chances that they'll spread in the environment, which could lead to further problems, including contamination of drinking water later down the line. And we already know that we've had contaminated drinking water with these chemicals, so it's not something that doesn't already happen. The amendment that we just added is another step in addressing these chemicals. It would require the PCA to adopt water quality standards for two of the more common PFAS chemicals. Currently, there are no general water quality standards for any PFAS in the state. So that is House File 78.
And you have some testifiers?
Yes. First on the list today is Sherry Smith from the White Bear Area Neighborhood Concerned Citizens Group.
Ms. Smith, if you could introduce yourself and who you're with for the record, and welcome.
Sherry, you'll have to unmute yourself first.
Yeah, sorry, not my first Zoom rodeo. There was no excuse for that. So thank you, Mr. Chair and honored committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Sherry Smith. I'm a citizen of the White Bear Lake area. My community was tremendously impacted by extreme levels of toxic pollutants coming from a company named Water Gremlin. I know that many of you, if not all of you, are completely familiar with that scenario. Because of what our community went through and has been subjected to, I'm compelled to testify in support of House File 78. So our community was exposed to high levels of the toxic chemical TCE, or trichloroethylene, for almost two decades. And I'm struck by the similarities between TCE and PFAS. Both TCE and PFAS have been found in drinking water in nearby communities, which has resulted in extensive efforts to treat and or clean up those chemicals. A growing body of research has shown that PFAS, like TCE, can have severe adverse impacts on human health. The White Bear area saw our water, soil, and air polluted by a terrible corporate neighbor who demonstrated over and over a disregard for human health and for the environment. We don't want to see what happened in our community happen in other places in the state. I mean, I need to say that again. We don't want to see what happened in our community happen in other places in this state, all right? We believe the toxic pollution sickened our citizens. We know the company polluted the environment with TCE, with TDCE, with lead, with hazardous waste. We know that the Water Gremlin pollution situation cost the state of Minnesota dearly, tremendously. Both tangible financial costs and human resource costs were expended over the last 2 years, and there's still much to be done on remediation, which also drains precious resources, all right? On behalf of myself and the Neighborhood Concerned Citizens Group, NCCG, we support this proposal because it will help ensure that the investigation and cleanup process associated with these toxic chemicals is more efficient, hopefully leading to less exposure to community members, hopefully leading to no more time and money expended by agencies involved in these scenarios. So on behalf of myself and the NCCG, again, we support this proposal. From our experience with Water Gremlin, we also understand the importance of setting limits on chemicals in order to protect human health and the environment. And as we begin to understand more about PFAS and other toxic chemicals, it's very clear that more stringent regulations must be built in when these harmful chemicals are used. We must do more to clean up the chemicals so that our communities are not regularly impacted like our community was by what happened with Water Gremlin in the White Bear Lake area. We are asking that you stand with us. Let's learn from the history of Water Gremlin and not allow ourselves to end up in another situation where human lives and the environment are vulnerable to tragic outcomes and costly resources must be expended in order to remediate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have a number of testifiers, so if we can hold questions for the testifiers until the end. Ms. Weber.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of House Files 78 and 79. I live in the Southeast Metro area affected by the flume of forever chemicals left in our area's groundwater by 3M's manufacturing processes decades ago. We drank, bathed, laundered, and cooked with Cottage Grove's contaminated water for 15 years. During that time, we were raising our family and I was pregnant with our youngest child. Our kids are grown and we now live on property in the area with our own well and septic. While our water now tests negative for PFAS, though positive for atrazine, unfortunately, I will now worry for the rest of my life if any future negative health in our family was caused or exacerbated by the exposure my growing family had for 15 years in Cottage Grove. This is especially because some PFAS builds up in the body over time. And as my 64-year-old husband and I eagerly await our turn for the COVID-19 vaccine, the information from the MPCA website that PFAS can cause a reduced immunological response to vaccination worries us more than a little. I believe there's also an equity concern that supports you doing all you can against PFAS on our behalf. There are pockets of poverty in the Southeast Metro where people don't have the means to move out of the flume. For example, in 2019, 11.9% of Newport residents had an income below the poverty level, which was significantly more than the poverty level of 9% across the entire state. Black people in Newport are those most likely to be in poverty, with 38.6% of them below the poverty level. As with so many environmental health issues, our Black and Brown friends often unfairly suffer more. I'm also a public health nurse and a nurse educator at the University of Minnesota, where we teach health professional students about the precautionary principle. When all we have is reasonable suspicion, the precautionary principle underscores the duty we have in public health to prevent harm, even in the face of uncertainty. It's the principle we uphold in the face of avoidable risk when we say, for example, better safe than sorry. I believe that idea supports you doing all you can now to make us more safe and less sorry. That includes adding PFAS to the list of hazardous substances and eliminating it from food packaging. And I might add, considering removal of the intent loophole from Subdivision 2 of House File 79. Thank you for the work you do and for listening to my testimony.
Thank you. Ms. Gauthier.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I did not have my hand up. If I did, that was an error.
You're next on the testifying list.
Oh, I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague. Thank you for having us here today, Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chairman, we are in support of this bill. We have a very similar, if not almost identical language of our own that unfortunately the language for which is still in the revisor's office, but it will be coming soon. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Assistant Commissioner Kurt Kadelka, to talk to more specifics of this bill.
Mr. Kadelka, if you could introduce yourself and for the record.
Thank you. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kurt Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I work on our land policy issues, which include our Superfund programs. There's been a lot of talk about the challenges PFAS already posed to human health and our natural resources and for cleanup. So I'm going to skip that and to save some time. I really want to talk about the Superfund program. It's based on a simple and powerful philosophy that if you create a mess and contaminate other people's drinking water, air they breathe, the soil the kids they play in, we have to do the right thing and clean it up. So the person who's responsible for it. A designation of a chemical as a hazardous substance is what allows Superfund tools to be used for the MPCA to ensure those entities that do create a mess clean it up. It is not our first tool. It is often the tool of last option. We try to use our other permitting programs and regulatory tools to be able to comply with cleanup, but many times that does fall upon our Superfund program. This bill reduces and eliminates legal challenges over the formal designation of PFAS as a hazardous substance, which will enable faster and more responsive reactions to releases of PFAS. This is done by, while MPCA and the state has that PFAS does meet the narrative standard of hazardous substance, many times an entity will spend their and the agency's resources on a time-consuming and often expensive legal and administrative challenges revolving around whether or not PFAS is a hazardous substance. This bill clearly makes it that it is a hazardous substance. And as a result, this will speed up and save those times and resources and put it to better use, the investigation and cleanup of contamination. This will result in quicker responses to remove our risks to drinking water and our health. Now, as Greta Gauthier mentioned earlier, we have a number of PFAS provisions this year, policy initiatives, and this is one of them. PFAS and its challenges does take a multi-approach, and we believe these, along with the governor's budget initiatives, will help us along that pathway, along with the Minnesota PFAS blueprint that the agencies will be releasing in the coming weeks, to really look at all of the issues that need to be done to address PFAS. We're talking about the Superfund program today, and this really is at the end of the tail. Once the contamination is in place, it's impacted our neighbor's health or our waters or our fish populations. We really do want to also look further upstream at a holistic approach for PFAS, but this is a critical tool to help address those already impacted. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'm representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, where I am the Director of Environmental Policy. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to make a couple of brief comments today, Mr. Chairman, on House File 78. First thing I wanted to do was let the committee be aware of some of the activity on the federal level. The EPA is in the process right now of implementing a PFAS action plan, Mr. Chairman, which will, as under part of it, is a review of whether or not PFAS and PFOS should be designated as a hazardous substance under CERCLA, which is better known as the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation Liability Act. So I wanted to make the committee aware that there is some federal action ongoing. Mr. Chairman, when we talk about PFAS and PFOS, there's upwards of 4,000 chemicals in this class. It's a large and diverse chemical family. They're known for their resistance to water, grease, oil, and heat. There's a wide range of properties and characteristics of this chemical class. And you have to acknowledge and the individual properties and behaviors in the different categories of these product uses. They do not all have the same toxicological effects. As I stated, they're not all the same, and a one-size-fits-all approach is an unfair and unscientific way to regulate a chemical class. We think the hazard and risk profiles are different for each of these uses. Some have alternatives, and the industry has or is in the process of transitioning to them. Mr. Chairman, the main point is we're concerned about the unintended consequences of this legislation. This chemical class has many uses that will be impacted. As I pointed out, it's resistant to oil, water, grease, and heat, but it also provides strength, durability, and unique protection in electrical properties. They're used in pacemakers, MRI machines, aircraft, solar panels, automobiles, as well as in cell phones, electronics, medical gowns, and even in photography. This one word change will impact businesses, manufacturers, retailers, cities, counties, hospitals, and airports, and will have impact on the state's remediation work, reporting, transfer, storage, and disposal of all those products I just mentioned. Mr. Chairman, we're really concerned about the unintended consequences of House File 78, especially the wide-ranging legal ramifications that would happen under this simple one-word change, Mr. Chairman. Also wanted to point out onto the A3 amendment, as Mr. Kadelka mentioned, there is about $1.4 million in the proposed PCA budget dealing with PFAS in terms of monitoring, inventory, and evaluation. And also in terms of site-specific, the PCA has been going through and doing site-specific water criteria in three water bodies throughout the state. So they are working towards those ends, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point that out to the committee. I'll stick around for any questions, and thank you for allowing me to testify today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I am with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank the author for the time she has put in discussing some of our city concerns with us leading up to this hearing, as well as the chair. The League of Minnesota Cities does respectfully oppose House File 78 and the A3 amendment that was added onto it. And let me explain the rationale for that. We certainly understand that the compounds being addressed by this legislation are of concern. They are a family of chemicals that we are finding problems with all over the place. But as Mr. Quillis just mentioned, there are thousands of these. They are in all kinds of products. And most importantly, they are not being introduced by the water treatment systems and the wastewater systems and the stormwater systems that are going to be regulated once these are designated in this way and these water quality standards are adopted. So I'm going to explain that briefly. First of all, and you can certainly verify my comments with agency staff if that is helpful, there is currently no technology to remove these compounds reliably or cost effectively or even technologically from wastewater streams. The volume of flow in wastewater is too high, and the organic content of the wastewater is too high to use the type of filtration systems that work on drinking water from groundwater supplies, which is much cleaner water to start with. So creating a standard that would be immediately put into every wastewater and stormwater permit as something that was expected to be being met would cause us to have every wastewater system and many stormwater systems out of compliance with federal law, which can be enforced by any citizen of the United States through a lawsuit at any time. I would add that the biosolids, the leftover sludge at the end of wastewater treatment, is where a lot of these chemicals end up consolidating during wastewater treatment. The normal use or the normal method of disposal of those compounds, of those biosolids right now, is to use it as fertilizer on non-food growing properties. So either non-crop lands, seed crop lands, or pasture land in some cases, not very often, And then otherwise not use, you know, vacant lands, conservation lands where you can still apply fertilizer, things like that. If these are designated hazardous, those biosolids would probably not be able to be applied in those cases if the test showed that PFAS compounds were present in any of the biosolids. That means that they have to go to a lined landfill that can accept hazardous materials. And to give you one example of that, the city of White Bear Lake had a stormwater pond that had to be dredged. It was found to have PAH compounds, not part of this, but a different hazardous material. That meant that it had to be landfilled. Just the sediment from that one stormwater pond was $500,000 for the city of White Bear Lake to deal with that sediment. That would be replicated on every wastewater plant in the state that has to get rid of biosolids through land application right now. I would add that this also creates a liability under strict liability requirements of federal law that does not immediately come into play necessarily, but it does come into play as soon as someone decides they want to get money to work on this issue. And Mr. Chair, it's even explained in one of the other pieces of testimony submitted from MCEA that by declaring these hazardous substances, that you are now opening up the ability to get financial compensation requirements from those who are deemed to be putting them into the environment. This would put that burden on municipal wastewater and stormwater systems. It would paint a big target on our back for liability claims against our city water systems. And that is a tremendous concern. It's the reason for one of the amendments that you'll see in front of the committee later, Mr. Chair. So finally, in closing, just setting standards that our city wastewater systems cannot meet, that are enforceable under federal law, and create immense costs. We do not have the landfill space to be putting all of our sediments from wastewater treatment into lined landfills in Minnesota. This is going to be a tremendous change in how we have to deal with the sediment from these systems. So we just feel that this is too broad of an approach, and it's really putting the immediate focus on cities and our public services, which is not where these products are coming from and is not who we feel should be bearing the immediate cost of the treatment of these things. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be around for questions.
Thank you. Ms. Wafel.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Craig Johnson said a lot of what I said, and I also want to echo our thanks to Representative Wasilewak for speaking with us about these issues. Just a few brief points. For those of you unfamiliar with the coalition, we are a group of 105 cities across the state outside the metro area. Our cities, too, are very concerned about the PFAS issue. Several of your testifiers said that they don't want this to happen to other places. And unfortunately, we have seen some of this. The city of Bemidji has found PFAS in their drinking water. That being said, we are very concerned about this approach because, as Craig explained, we can't do anything about it. So it is essentially opening us up to liability without actually helping our citizens, you know, clean it up from a wastewater standpoint. We really do want to do something about PFAS, but we think with respect to HF78 that city wastewater and stormwater need to be written out of it. And we also think that if we really want to tackle this problem, we really need some help tackling the sources of PFAS. We are going to be introducing some legislation later this session, seeking help for municipalities on trying to ensure that PFAS are not ending up in their wastewater stream. We think that is a better use of our resources rather than exposing us to potential liability. We hope that we can continue to work with Representative Wasilewak and see if we can find a way to ensure that we are protecting our citizens without, you know, creating significant potential liabilities for cities for something they can't control. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Helmers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is John Helmers. I'm the Executive Director of the Solid Waste Administrators Association, an normally called SWA, which is an affiliate of the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I'm speaking on behalf of both organizations today. Our members have concerns with House File 78. This bill would define PFAS as a hazardous substance under Minnesota Environmental Response and Liability Act, the MERLA. And while we share the author's interest in addressing the presence of these chemicals in our environment, we must point out that this bill will do much more than create an enforcement tool for the Pollution Control Agency. MERLA establishes an extensive private cause of action that includes joint and several liability for economic and personal injuries and applies this liability retroactively. Public entities can be targets of MERLA claims. County-owned and operated facilities that compost source separated organic waste or that provide landfill disposal for waste that are not producers of PFAS. These important parts of our solid waste management system are only receivers of those compounds as constituents of the waste disposed of by the people and businesses of Minnesota. We are concerned that public facilities will be subject to lawsuits due to PFAS found in monitoring at publicly owned county or district landfills and compost facilities. PFAS chemicals number in the thousands and have been identified in numerous waste products that are already present in the environment. The experience has shown us that remediation is much more costly than prevention. And the PCA may say that this is a tool to go after generators or bad actors, but the proposal in no way restricts legal consequences to those responsible to the problem. Again, counties do not produce these PFAS. Our exposure is created by the act of following state requirements to manage solid waste. It's counterintuitive to subject the public to liability through legislation intended to hold accountable those who create the pollution. SWA and AMC support efforts to address PFAS contaminations through one, extended producer responsibility for managing waste containing these chemicals, to require manufacturers to remove these chemicals from future products, and three, holding producers of chemical and manufacturers of these containing products responsible for the cleanup costs. To deal with legacy issues with PFAS already in the environment, Minnesota and the U.S. Congress should invest collective remedial efforts and not push the cost to local governments where less resources are available. House File 78 is a well-intentioned but problematic approach to address PFAS, and if advanced, at a minimum, the public should be protected from liability. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Risotto.
Chairperson Hansen and members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on House File 78. My name is Steve Risotto, Senior Director at the American Chemistry Council. ACC supports a comprehensive approach to managing PFAS, but we are concerned that implementation of HF 78 would have broad, unintended, and negative consequences on the economy and on local government. President Biden has indicated that addressing PFAS is a priority for his Environmental Protection Agency. Among the US EPA's first steps will be consideration of the listing of the two most common PFAS, PFOA and PFOS, under CERCLA. A legislative mandate requiring designation of all PFAS as hazardous would ignore the fact that there are vast differences within the PFAS family of chemistry. As a consequence, many essential products and activities could be inappropriately captured in the liability net created by this legislation. Assigning liability for contamination under federal or state law is often a protracted process that can take years to resolve. The prospect for significant delays would be exacerbated considerably by the addition of hundreds, perhaps thousands, of substances. Some of these PFAS were in use for decades. A hazardous designation for these substances would lead to cleanup liability at many sites and for many entities not previously swept up by a hazardous designation. Moreover, it could lead to reopening of many sites that have previously completed remediation. The strong fluorine carbon bond in PFAS provides products with strength, durability, stability, and resilience. These properties are critical to the reliable and safe function of a broad range of products. PFAS play a vital role in everything from designing automobiles with lower emissions and improved safety to manufacturing semiconductors, solar panels, and high-performance electronics. right now, PFAS are being used in COVID-19 testing equipment and to provide life-saving protection in medical garments. State law does not distinguish between the potential source of a substance designated as hazardous, regardless of whether it comes from an industrial, commercial, municipal, or household source. Whether the substance is a consumer product, a manufacturing byproduct, or an element of a waste stream is irrelevant. As a consequence, enactment of HF 78 will impact a wide variety of parties not contemplated by the bill's sponsors. These could include industries making or recycling electronics, manufacturers of stain and water repellent clothing and other textiles, paper, food, packaging, and cookware, airports, fire stations, and fire training facilities that use Class B firefighting foam, publicly owned treatment works, solid waste landfills that have accepted waste from industrial or commercial manufacturers or consumers of any of the above products, and farms and other locations where biosolids have been applied. The bottom line is that hazardous substance designation is a blunt, inefficient tool for addressing priority issues. Such designation is complicated, results in extensive delays, and is fraught with unintended consequences. Current state law defers to US EPA in determining whether to designate a substance as hazardous. Given the potentially wide-ranging impacts of such a designation, the state should defer any decision on listing until US EPA has made a determination. Thank you. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Eidsness.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today on House File 78. My name is Jay Eidsness, and I'm testifying on behalf of Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. MCEA supports this bill. PFAS pollution is poised to be the next generation's public health crisis. As we have seen in the East Metro, once released into the natural environment, PFAS pollution wreaks havoc on public works infrastructure and human health. Listing PFAS as a hazardous substance under MRLA is the correct decision. Once listed under MRLA, state regulatory bodies have more power to require responsible parties to remediate PFAS contamination and improves the state's ability to recover costs from responsible parties when they fail to act. This is important. PFAS pollution is pervasive and extremely difficult and expensive to clean up once released into the environment. Listing PFAS under MRLA enables regulators to access a greater amount of resources to address threatened and actual PFAS releases. We must take action now. Public health experts are discovering more linkages between PFAS consumption and adverse health outcomes. Many of these newer discoveries are linking negative health effects to extremely low concentrations of these chemicals. Left unchecked, PFAS pollution will continue to spread in our surface and groundwaters, infecting aquatic species and threatening drinking water supplies. Slowing the spread of these insidious chemicals will take a coordinated effort. Listing PFAS under MRLA is a needed step. MCEA applauds the bill authors and committee's efforts to address this growing problem, and we encourage the committee to swiftly move this bill forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I have Mr. Hill from Department of Health is available for testimony. I'm not sure if he was seeking to testify or if he's just available. We'll take that as availability. I have several questions. Representative Becker-Finn, then Representative Heintzman, then Representative Lewick, then Representative Jordan. So Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also want to thank Representative Wasilewicz for bringing this forward. If folks remember, last biennium, I was the chief author of a bill to ban PFAS chemicals in firefighting foam and children's products. And I think that's important to bring up at this point, because one of the reasons I had to bring that bill forward was that the original bill to protect firefighters from these chemicals specifically listed different chemicals. And what happened is that then the companies just kind of tweaked the formulas that they were using so that firefighters were no longer protected. And so I think that's using the broad categorization is the way that you actually protect people from exposure to these chemicals. And so I think that's really important. And none of the arguments against a bill like this have really changed since we had the firefighting the ban passed, and many of the members of this committee voted in favor of that bill to protect firefighters. The other thing I wanted to comment on is that cities are already paying for these chemicals now. And in fact, for the city of Bemidji, whose water, drinking water was polluted for many, many years, we allocated over $10 million in bonding dollars to build them a new water treatment facility. And it's really disappointing that there is so much negativity about this bill while we're not hearing any potential solutions coming from the folks who are had testified in opposition today. And so because cities and counties could be doing more, and I'm curious if what are the solutions that you are bringing forward? Because at the end of the day, we Minnesotans are being poisoned by these chemicals, and this is a way to help address that. And it's easy to pick on the ideas that are brought forward, but I'm not seeing any action or changes coming from the Chamber of Commerce or coming from the Chemistry Council or coming from others. And it's our duty as legislators to protect our constituents, and that's really what the focus needs to be. So I'm not sure if the cities or the counties want to weigh in, but what are you doing and what are your members doing to protect Minnesotans from chemicals?
Mr. Johnson or Ms. Wayfall?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Craig Johnson, League of Minnesota Cities. So as Ms. Wayfall mentioned in her testimony, we have legislation that was introduced by Representative Fisher last year and is being drafted to be reintroduced this year that would look at sources of PFAS compounds and assess how that applies to wastewater in various situations around the state. Our folks at wastewater facilities need to know where these things are coming into the system to stop them from being in the system. We have no treatment. The reason we don't have a solution is because there is no technology to remove this from wastewater. So the only solution you can have is to move earlier in the process and start looking at where is it coming from? How do we prevent it from getting into the wastewater? And so some of that is going to be by working with local businesses, local industries. Some of it is going to be by determining what types of products we use and whether there are alternatives. And some of it is going to be regulatory coming from the state legislature. Ms. Weffel may have more details on the legislation she wants to mention, but I think our focus has been, we're very much interested in keeping these things out of our water, but we don't have technology to do that. We have to do that by looking at where they're coming from.
Ms. Weffel.
I don't have a lot to add. As Craig said, we are going to be introducing legislation, and I think Representative Becca Finn just made a great case for hearing this bill, hopefully later this session, that if we want to tackle this problem, we need to work together and look at solutions. And we can't get it out of our wastewater, so let's talk together as a group, have a solution for keeping it out before it gets in there. Thank you.
Representative Becca Finn, follow up.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would encourage cities and counties to be talking to some of the folks that testified today from the Chemistry mm-hmm. Council and industry, because we know that that is where the pollution comes from. And you're right. It isn't right that our cities, counties, and taxpayers are bearing the brunt of this. And so, the answer isn't going to be to continuing to come to the legislature and ask for money to clean things up that taxpayers are not responsible. I encourage you to push harder further up the stream to who's actually responsible for these types of pollution.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of comments and then also a question for the bill author. As most of the members of this committee know, I have been talking about PFAS for a couple of years now. As the 3M settlement became more of a public conversation in the lawsuit. There were a number of, I think it's fair to say, unintended consequences in the form of regulation. And I'm not sure that the general public is fully aware of that. And it is, of course, impacting previous to this legislation even being discussed, let alone potentially pass. And the conversation I wanted to have is around this issue with composters dealing with this issue. And most people, I don't think, understand that we're finding PFAS in grass clippings. Okay, how did that get there? And I don't know that anybody really has those answers yet. And I want to thank the bill author for visiting with me earlier this week. Representative Wozlik, I appreciate that. We definitely have a different vision for how to work on this problem. I don't think this bill is the right way to do it, but I'm glad we're having a conversation, because if we're seeing all of these very well-intentioned programs to divert waste from landfills, in many cases being shut down, at least in, or I should say at the very least, in some cases, struggling to find solutions to MPCA's demands as the composters, food waste composters primarily, I'm referring to, for PFAS, they have that, I have trace amounts of PFAS in their leachate. So now what do we got? We have a huge problem trying to remove that. And the solution from MPCA was to truck those materials to a permitted facility and dilute and to discharge directly into the Mississippi in some cases. I don't think anybody sees that necessarily as a solution, but people need to understand the impact of trying to solve this problem on the surface, when I think a number of the testifiers did a really good job of delving into the huge impact that this has on products, not just food containers, but also everything in between, from electronic equipment to pallets that we're having to deal with. So I hope that the bill author, and I hope that MPCA are taking an approach here that can narrow our attack to the most effective solutions at hand first, before going for such a huge, broad, and very controversial solution that may very easily capture elements of this problem that don't contribute to the kind of impact that is causing the problems that we're seeing downstream. And I think that if we got down to brass tacks, we'd find out there's a whole heck of a lot of science that needs to be done to figure out what those targeted approaches might be. Here again, we're finding PFAS in the rainforests in South America, and it didn't get there because of a McDonald's cup. And I'm not meaning to pick on McDonald's. They're one of those that is actually on their own planning a process to eliminate PFAS from their products by 2023. If I read their announcement recently correctly, that that's something that the private sector is doing on their own without any kind of mandate. And I hope that other businesses are taking note and looking for alternatives on their own as well. I'd like to ask the bill author if she's familiar with how many products this contains. And I know that we've heard some testimony today, Representative Wozlik, but for example, clothing. Do we know if PFAS is in clothing and what that would mean if this bill passed and now it contains a hazardous material under this language? Does that mean that those items would have to be removed from store shelves at some point? And what is the actual human impact of those elements in clothing? Do we know them to be healthy, or do we know them to be dangerous? If you could address a few of those concerns, Representative Wozlik, that would be great.
The bill's author, Representative Wozlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't answer all those questions, but I can try a couple of them. So I know it is in some types of clothing, specifically with water repellent clothing, those sorts of things that have those those properties in them. And whether or not they're harmful, I don't know that we know that 100% right now. I think a lot of the research that's been done, PFAS hasn't been done on, you know, exposure to outside of the body, and more focused on what happens when it's in the environment or in the body, human body, or in this case, in the animal subjects' bodies with the science that's been done. My understanding with Merla is that this wouldn't apply to a product like a clothing item being sold in a store. And if other folks have thoughts on that are here, PCA or others, to chime in, but that's my understanding of, looks like.
Commissioner Kadelka has an answer for that, I think.
Chair and committee members, thank you for the questions. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to clear up some of the confusion here. Hazardous substance declaration does not equal hazardous waste designation. Those are two separate administrative processes. Hazardous waste designation, which controls the from cradle to grave transport of hazardous waste, would take another rulemaking or legislative action or federal actions. That is not that. So in the case of biosolids, that does not say that they can't be applied anymore or have to go to a landfill. It doesn't mean, as mentioned earlier, that it cannot be used in medical equipment or on a jacket for rain coating. What it does mean is if you as a company release this into the environment and create a mess and start impacting our drinking water, our fish populations, our humans, health, that you have to clean it up. Not that you're getting a penalty or that. What you're asked to do is just make it right. It's a limited piece in that regard. And we will use other tools to help. I know it has been mentioned that they're the permitting and for biosolids that can be able to be used in that regard. So that's what it is. And I just want to make clear what it does and does not do. It will help us speed up the effort to respond to this. Because right now, resources, whether it's taxpayer resources or companies' resources, are being spent in administrative letter writing and legal actions instead of investigating where it is and cleaning it up and taking it away from the exposure from folks. And that's our goal here. We agree PFAS is a very large issue. It will take a comprehensive plan. And the governor's proposals, whether it's the policy proposal, which this is one, along with our budget proposals and the release of the Minnesota PFAS blueprint, we'll look at that all-encompassing piece and looking at things upstream to help folks out. So we need to pass a number of pieces to move forward. And as a state, we've come to this challenge before, whether it's PCBs or lead, where we had to take a multi-pronged approach. And that's what we're looking to start here today. This is one of those core pieces that are needed. Thank you.
Representative Heintzman for a follow-up, and then I've got four other questions where we'll do one question each. So, Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that Mr. Kadelka or maybe even Greta could answer this next question. I brought up the example of recycled materials that were no longer able to be diverted from landfills because of MPCA decision making. Can you please help me understand why it's not, I'm gonna try to answer this question very carefully. Why can't we find solutions to this problem that avoid putting grass clippings in landfills because of your actions at MPCA? There are literally thousands and thousands of tons of material that are now being or have been previously diverted to landfills because of MPCA decisions on this problem. So people that are trying to do the right thing and recycle food waste, recycle other materials they have in their yard, aren't able or haven't been able to do so because of MPCA decision making. Isn't there another solution? Maybe it's the science has to catch up. Maybe you guys need to be working on finding those solutions. I'm not sure what that looks like, but maybe you could help me understand what might have changed from the examples that I'm laying out to where we are today, because it seems like MPCA hasn't really had a great plan to help keep responsible people doing the right thing protected And by that, I mean food waste recyclers or other recyclers, while also trying to work on this problem. So what is the solution in your minds as to how to fix this without hurting people who shouldn't be hurt?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I will try to be brief here. The specific example that we're talking about is someone who was not applying contact water from a compost facility to a farm field. Then they asked to do so, and we asked them to check for PFAS, and PFAS was there at amounts of concerning amounts. Our concern was then not to create a new problem and apply it to areas where there were close by private wells. There's a number, the specific location, there was a number of other issues with odor and that came into play about whether or not the business moved forward in its previous format. PFAS was one aspect of many. In general, I think it needs to be a multi-pronged approach on addressing this. And a number of things in the governor's budget would help that, looking at resources at the LCCMR project to look at what are those things upstream and our sources of it. The legislature helped provide some funding 2 years ago, and we have a study that's on its way that looks at the sources for composting facilities for PFAS so that we can be able to target it. It's legislation such as the author here has next, which is banning its use before it ever gets to those landfills, before it gets to the compost sites, where we have non-essential uses of PFAS that are not needed, and we can stop the problem before it occurs and addressing it on the back end. Addressing it on the back end really does create more problems. It's more expensive, it's more time consuming, and the damage is done versus a pollution prevention activities across the spectrum that will help our compost facilities, our landfills, and also our wastewater plants. And that will be part of the Minnesota PFAS blueprint that we'll be releasing in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
And if Representative Heinzman, if you could continue to work with Commissioner Kudelka on this specific situation, I think it sounds like a constituent challenge, and then we can hopefully hear back on progress made on it. I do need to move forward. I've got five people here, and then we've got some amendments. So, but I wanted to give the time because we said we'd have time for PCA, so I wanted to have that luxury there. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my question was going to be exactly when are we going to deal with the amendments, because they're pretty important, and we've had a lengthy discussion by some very well-versed testifiers. So I will hold my questions and for the time we need to do these amendments, but we've had some very excellent testimony, and we probably need to get on with these amendments as soon as possible, simply because you'll notice these amendments don't try to defeat Representative Walnick's efforts here. They're simply to try to provide a little bit of dispensation here for people that didn't create PFAS. They simply end up being the repository for it. So I hope we can move on to that fairly quickly here, Mr. Chair.
We will as soon as we get through.
My turn again.
Yep. You just used 2 minutes. So we're going to go to Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for, I think, either Commissioner Gauthier or Commissioner Kudelka. Can you talk a little bit, Commissioner Kudelka, you talked a lot about the resources and all the work that Minnesota Pollution Control Agency puts into identifying, enforcing, mitigating that. Can you actually detail what sort of resources we as a state are putting in to PFAS and how this bill would impact all those resources that we're currently using?
Ms. Gauthier or Mr. Kudelka?
Chair and committee members, I could tackle this very briefly. A lot of this is preventing future uses of those resources as we go forward and we continue to deal with PFAS sites. I will just say one of our pieces on our conversations with 3M in the East Metro area, one of the biggest hurdles to go across was PFAS a hazardous substance or not? And did they need to do anything? anytime we approach someone where we see PFAS negatively impacting groundwater or people's health, that is the first question that comes to us. And we spend an inordinate amount of time about that versus finding out, let's get some treatment on someone's well. And that's what this bill tries to prevent. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to also echo my thanks to Representative Wasluck for bringing this important bill forward. It seems like there's real consensus here that this is a huge problem that needs to be addressed. And the argument that the reason not to is because of liability concerns and about the very ubiquitousness of these chemicals strikes me as not a great argument. So I'm not sure I have a question for anyone. I appreciate Assistant Commissioner Kudelka's clarifications of important points, and continuing to spin our wheels and do nothing strikes me as not the answer. Thank you.
Representative Becker.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You know, I'm just gonna make a comment so we can keep moving here. A couple of concerns, we really have to look at this more closely. You know, from how it's written because of the broad approach is what really concerns me. I had someone look at this that's not even, just general, out of the blue, who doesn't deal with this. And a couple of things that he came up with, which we have to really be concerned, even if the products are not manufactured in Minnesota, they're going to be banned for sale. So number one, we're going to hurt our border communities again. Will Minnesota retailers be sued for selling PFASs? One concern I have, and he brought this up too when we had this discussion, if PFAS is so bad, why don't we let the EPA take the lead? And this way it's not state by state, because look at what California has done and how that has hurt things with their individual approach. So then the question comes, with this broad language, will the AG start suing over state companies for selling these products in Minnesota? It's just so broad, the language right now. Hopefully some of the amendments will help out, but still, to me, who's going to profit the most from this is trial attorneys. That is just how the language is so broad and can be misinterpreted. I know we have the commissioner, and I appreciate his opinion, but that's what trial lawyers like, is broad statements, bills like this, because then we can have interpretations and it goes in front of the attorney. So I have some really concerns from that. I get it. There are concerns out there. We want to be good stewards of the environment, but this bill is too wide. It caused more problems than good, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. The bill is going to be laid over, so there's going to be opportunity to continue to work on problem solving. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to express my concerns on how broad it is. And I think there's going to be a lot of concerns with that as we keep finding out more information about just the whole issue. I think there's a lot to be found out, and I don't want us to act too quickly, too in scoping, too soon, and then find out we really didn't do a very good job at protecting some of the other areas in which those chemicals are used. When Representative Becker Finn carried the legislation for the firefighters and chemicals, I had worked with Jeff Howe on that bill, and I know that was very limited to what chemicals it was going to be looking at. And I wish we would do something a little bit more like that, look at what exactly do we want to do. I know New York just signed a bill December 3rd, 2020. It's not effective until 2023. And that's the effective date is something that's very worrisome to me as well. So I hope there is time to work on this, and I hope you are able to look a little bit more on how to make it a little bit more narrowed and not so broad. And also maybe we need a little bit of time to figure it out. Thank you.
So we're gonna move to the amendments. Representative Lewick, you have the H0078A6 amendment. Could you describe move the amendment and describe it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A6 amendment first. Basically, it would provide liability relief for public landfill and compost facilities who have no, they didn't create any of these compounds, but they happen to be at the tail end of the chain for these. And we've had some expert testimony across the board that talks about how this impacts primarily local government units, but also some, obviously some private facilities would be impacted. And I just want to get this clear on the record. This amendment and the next amendment do not try to defeat or in any way really damage Representative Walczyk's legislation here. It simply provides a little bit of liability protection because the moment that these substances on a broad brush are declared hazardous, that changes the dynamics for all these facilities. And let's not, as elected officials here, don't forget that the very people, particularly the ones that were speaking on behalf of the county and the cities, they are representing people with election certificates too. Many, many more than the 134 of us here in the House of Representatives. And so we need to pay particular attention because that's not something that our friends that have made those presentations just made up on their own. This is coming right from folks at the deck plate levels, we said in the Navy, that are responsible right now to run those landfills that deal, and particularly ones that deal with composting. So I'm not going to try to go back and testify our testifiers, but this simply provides liability. This doesn't say that MPCA cannot adjust or do things with their permitting process that every one of these facilities have to operate, but this provides a different level of liability. It protects the taxpayers that those other elected officials are responsible for. So with that,
Representative Lewick moves the amendment to the author of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would actually side with Representative Tama Tice on this and say that we don't want to do things too quickly. So I would like to work with the cities and other folks on this and not take this amendment at this time.
And Representative Fisher has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, I want to say I appreciate the intent of the amendment that's coming up here. I am concerned. I want to make sure that the issues around the municipalities are being addressed and the other government agencies. I do appreciate hearing from Representative Walczyk that she wants to continue the conversation because the amendment that's proposed only covers part of what I was hearing from the cities. The cities and the municipalities are also concerned about this poison getting to the waters and impacting their people. And what they want to do is they also need the funding to start going upstream within their systems to find out who are putting those chemicals in there. And so this amendment doesn't go far enough. That's why I'm not supporting it at this point. And I would also say that it is very important that we follow. I know the governor has money out there. As you've heard, I've got a bill out there to start providing money so that we can do those things. And Representative Walczyk, I would look forward to working with you going forward to make sure that we can link these two together. And on top of that, I want to say, I think you've done a great job in the past on tough issues like that. When we have the TCE bill in front of us, you did a great job of listening to everybody and taking that from your original bill introduction to where we had a great bill at the end. So I know that you'll do a great job listening to everybody and make sure that we've got a great solution when we're done here. So thank you.
Commissioner Kudelka had asked to speak on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I'll be brief and this testimony will work for the next bill amendment also. So we appreciate the conversations we've had with entities on this, but we just want to really bring up and note that there are liability protections for public landfills, compost facilities, and wastewater plants already in the Superfund program. And so right now, the general liability limitations for those municipalities already apply. There are already liability protections too for those things that are covered under state and federal permits, which may help in regards to this area. specifically to landfills, the MSW landfills, our regular trash landfills, there's a cap on liability for cleanup activities connected to their financial assurance funds. So these are things that are already placed for existing hazardous substances. It works for those hazardous substances. We'd like to learn more from these entities why it doesn't work for this hazardous substance, these protections. And so with the author, we'd like to have more conversations with to see if there's a more tailored approach to that. But in general, we oppose broad exemptions to Superfund because it does create, the reason Superfund works is because it is an even playing field for all entities. And so that's why we must oppose this amendment, but would like to keep working with folks to learn more.
To the maker of the amendment, Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still certainly appreciate the comments. And again, I want to thank the author for the basic bill. But just like Commissioner Connell mentioned, some of us are a little concerned about broad applications that don't zero in with a little more specificity on where we're going with this. So I would still urge that we adopt this. And again, I want to make sure that we understand this does not reduce what the author's doing. It simply provides some protection for other entities of government and gives them a little breathing space. So with that, we probably ought to vote.
The clerk will take the roll on the A6 amendment.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, no.
Hanson, no. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, no.
Wasilewicz, no. Heintzelman, Josh.
Heintzelman, yes.
Heintzelman, yes. Acom, Patty.
Acom, no.
Acom, no. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, yes.
Ackland, yes. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, yes.
Backer, yes. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
No.
Becker Finn, no. Eklund, Rob.
Yes.
Eklund, yes. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Green, Steve.
Yes.
Green, yes. Igo, Spencer.
Yes.
Igo, I. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, no.
Jordan, no. Healer, Heather.
Healer, no.
Healer, no. Lee, Poo.
Lee, no.
Lee, no. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, no.
Lippert, no. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, yes.
Lewick, yes. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tama, or Tice, Tama.
I can't say my name. Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. 9 ayes and 10 noes.
The amendment does not prevail. The next amendment, Representative Lewick, the A7 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And I would move the A7, and it specifically would deal with wastewater and stormwater facilities. Obviously, again, those are municipalities throughout the state of Minnesota. At the interest of saving a little bit of time here, I mean, this would provide the same type of protection, and I think it would improve the author's bill and ensure that we've got everybody on the team here working and shift that focus upstream because, frankly, these municipalities are at the very bottom end of this, and we need to be looking upstream and stop this stuff from coming in.
To the author of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will echo what was said to the other amendment. I think it's worth taking more time on this than just doing this right now. So happy to continue the conversation with the cities and the counties and folks who are impacted to try and make sure we get this right so we can move forward. Thank you.
The clerk will take the roll on the A7 amendment.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, no.
Hanson, no. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, no.
Wasilewicz, no. Heintzelman, Josh.
Heintzelman, yes.
Heintzelman, yes. Acom, Patty.
Acom, no.
Acom, no. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, yes.
Ackland, yes. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, yes.
Backer, yes. Becker Finn, Jamie.
No.
Jonathan, no. Eklund, Rob?
Yes.
Eklund, yes. Fisher, Peter?
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Green, Steve?
Yes.
Green, yes. I go, Spencer?
I go, yes.
I go, yes. Jordan, Sydney?
Jordan, no.
Jordan, no. Keeler, Heather?
Keeler, no.
Keeler, no. Lee, Fu?
Lee, no.
Lee, no. Lippert, Todd?
Lippert, no.
Lippert, no. Lewick, Dale?
Lewick, yes.
Lewick, yes. Morrison, Kelly?
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Nelson, Nathan?
Nelson, I.
Nelson, I. Tice, Tama?
Tice, I.
Tice, I. Nine ayes and 10 noes.
The amendment does not prevail. Representative Wozlawick, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the committee members for a good discussion today. I agree with what people have said. There's more that we need to do on working on this bill and also on upstream sort of work, working on figuring out where the PFAS is coming from and preventing that from getting into the waste stream and into water systems and all that good stuff. So look forward to good conversations on those issues and support of those legislative efforts, since I know PCA and others are working on those. And just would ask for support for the bill. It's important that we have this discussion and that we are able to move forward with one component of this more comprehensive plan to address the issue of PFAS.
Representative Wozlawick renews her motion that House File 78 as amended be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. House File 79, Representative Wozlawick, would you move that House File 79 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health and Finance Policy Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move that House File 79 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Representative Wozlawick also has an author's amendment. Will you move the A2 amendment and explain your amendment briefly?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move the A2 amendment. This amendment requires the Department of Health to amend the health risk limit for PFOS, so the health risk limit does not exceed 0.015 parts per billion.
Is there any discussion on the author's amendment to get it into the shape she would like? Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll on the author's amendment.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wozlawick, Amy.
Wozlawick, aye.
Wozlawick, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Eklund, Susan?
Eklund, aye.
Eklund, aye. Backer, Jeff?
A backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm hopping back and forth from different committees. Is this the passage of the bill?
This is the author's amendment.
Becker, Finn, aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter?
Fisher, aye.
Your eye. Green, Steve?
Aye.
Green, aye. I go, Spencer?
I go, aye.
I go, aye. Jordan, Sydney?
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather?
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu?
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale?
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly?
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama?
Aye.
Tice, aye. 18 ayes and 1 no.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Wozlawick, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 79 would ban the manufacture, distribution, and sale of food packaging that contains intentionally added PFAS beginning January 1st, 2022. This bill also requires the Department of Health to amend the risk limit for PFOS so that it does not exceed 0.015 parts per billion. That's a brief description of the bill.
And we have some testifiers. If they could limit their testimony to 1 minute each. Eileen Weber. Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Weber is no longer on the meeting.
Okay. Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, for the record, Tony Quillis, Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Again, I'm going to start off with some activity that happened on the federal level. In November of 2016, long chain PFAS were no longer used in food contact applications. And in July of last year, the FDA announced an agreement with manufacturers of PFAS used in food packaging to voluntarily phase out all sales of short chain PFAS used in food contact substances beginning in January of 2021. Mr. Chairman, you'll also hear that three other states have passed this, but no other state has got the restrictions that are in House File 79. Maine has their equivalent of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency identifying safer alternatives. Washington is only in fiber-based products. They must perform a safer alternative assessment and evaluate alternatives. New York is also only based on plant fibers. And it has no packaging component definition, Mr. Chairman. And then also two other things, what I call the manufacturer retail lag. When we talk about regulating use of products in the state of Minnesota, we've always done a stop date for manufacturer and then allow retail to move through it. So just wanted to point that out to the committee, Mr. Chairman. And then I think the most important part, Mr. Chairman, on the A2 amendment that was adopted, I think this is a very dangerous precedent for as long as I've been around. When we regulate chemicals in this state, we've usually let the state agency employees go through the rulemaking process, take ensure public input on how we should go through and set limits for chemicals in this state, Mr. Chairman. And if we're going to go down the road of starting the legislature to start setting these limits, I just think it's a very dangerous precedent that we're going to get set. And especially I'd like to point out within Minnesota Section 144.0751 that's referenced in there, it talks about that there must be a scientifically acceptable peer-reviewed information. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know, maybe it has been, but I'm not sure that 0.015 is going to be scientifically acceptable and peer-reviewed based off that peer-reviewed information. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'll stick around for questions and let Mr. Collada get his information in also.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Mr. Collada.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. I appreciate the opportunity to comment with you. I'm president of the Midwest Food Products Association, which represents a number of food manufacturing facilities located in Minnesota, as well as other states. So we've seen this type of legislation, as was mentioned, adopted in three other states. New York State is the earliest ban, taking effect December 31st of 2022. And the industry has already voluntarily responded, knowing that this is coming. There's a number of food packaging materials that have already been replaced with PFAS. There's others that we're in the process of attempting to replace. The concern with HF 79 is that it's not enough time. January of 2022 is too early, and we would ask for another year, and we think that that will allow for the food processing industry, the packaging, to be able to convert over to PFAS-free components.
So Mr. that's Collada, how we request- there is an amendment, and if we can get to it, I think it's probably going to be looked upon favorably. Mr. Swearingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll keep my comments short, and please refer to my written testimony if you have any additional questions. I'm Sean Swearingen. I'm a director for the Alliance for Telomere Chemistry Stewardship. ATCS opposes HF 79 as written, as legislation seeks to undertake further regulation of food package materials when the industry is already phasing out use of PFAS in food packaging. We'd recommend amending HF 79 as written, extending the food packaging sunset timeline effective January 1st, 2025. I'll stay on the line and welcome any additional questions. As previously mentioned, I will note McDonald's Corporation has even further announced will cease food sales with packaging containing PFAS by the end of 2025. Thank you.
Representative Heinzman, to the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A3 does just as was actually discussed by the testifier a moment ago, and it would move the enactment date back 1 year. I think that this would help. I had a good conversation with the bill author the other day, and we discussed the possibility. There's still, of course, many questions as to what this bill might impact, but I think this is a good step in the right direction. So I would move the A3, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heimsman moves the A3 amendment to the author of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would encourage members to vote for that amendment.
The clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, yeah, aye.
Backer, aye. Becker, Finn, Jamie. Becker, Finn, Jamie. Ackland, Rob.
Yes.
Ackland, yes. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, yes.
Fisher, yes. Green, Steve.
Aye.
Green, aye. I go, Spencer.
I go, aye.
I go, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Becker, Finn, Jamie. Becker, Finn, Jamie. That is 18 ayes and one abstention.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we on final passage of the bill? What are we going to do?
We're on 3 minutes left, final passage.
Okay. So I see Representative Heintzman has a question. I don't know if you want to take that, Mr. Chair, or...
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had mentioned there are a number of folks that do have questions about this bill, and we are running out of time. I understand that, but I hope that we could discuss some of these concerns. There are so many products that would potentially be affected by this legislation, Representative Wasilewicz. I'm wondering if you have a current list of what may be impacted if this bill were to come law. And if you do have a list, I'd really appreciate that, because as I'm reading the bill, it sounds to me like there's a chance that even some of the palleting material that contains food would be impacted by this, even though it doesn't make direct contact with food. Am I reading that correct? And then if that's correct, what other products may also be affected?
Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heintzman, I don't have a complete list, but the language around food packaging is something that we're going to continue to work on, so we can touch base on that as we move forward with the bill.
Representative Heintzman, this will be going to the Commerce Committee as well, and we'll likely make it back here. There's several stops for it to go, and I would ask that people continue to work with the author as it makes its route.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will eagerly anticipate another opportunity to ask more questions.
Representative Wasilewicz renews her motion that House File 79 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Ackland, Rob.
Aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Green, no.
Green, no. I go, Spencer.
I go, aye.
I go aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lulick, Dale.
Lulick, aye.
Lulick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, no.
Tice, no. And so that is 16 ayes and 3 noes.
The motion is adopted. It's on its way to Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, members. I do want to note that the Commissioner of PCA was on board for answering questions. We will bring her back again. I think we had a good discussion today, and we are adjourned.